Coming to you from an undisclosed location in Bloomington, Indiana, this is your weekly dose of common sense. I'm Ashley F., and we have Ashley S. back with us.
Yes, I'm Ashley S., and I'm fighting a head cold right now, so bear with me. This is about as articulate as I get.
Yeah, we're excited to have her back. We're going to be talking to her about CPAC here in a little bit. That's where she was last week, being fancy and stealing me pens, which I'm very excited about.
It wasn't stealing. They gave them willingly.
Well, if they're just out in the open, I figure anybody has dibs.
Absolutely. They have so many awesome free things there.
Dude, free stuff is the best part about conferences. When I went to
Atlanta, I came back with three more bags than I had brought.
When I went to Atlanta for SPJ, there was so much free crap everywhere. Like, the C-SPAN pens are, like, the best pens. They had, like, three tables when I was there, when I was in Atlanta for SPJ, and I, like, stole all their pens. They're my favorite pens. I'm going to be so sad when they die. Nice. They write so well. But we have a few things to talk about this week. First off, yesterday, President Obama had what he likes to call a healthcare summit, which I like to call a bunch of BS in a room.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I watched probably about 90% of it. That, like, all I could stomach today.
I just keep getting distracted by that guy that looks like a pig or like a bat. Waxman, Senator Waxman, he looks creepy.
I don't know what has been going on, but every Democrat starts with, "Thank you, President Obama. You know, I got a letter from so-and-so.
Oh, no, one of the stories was this constituent couldn't afford dentures, so she had to wear her dead sister's teeth. Yeah. You can afford to have teeth extracted, put into a substance to put in your mouth, and that's cheaper than dentures?
I got news. Okay, listen, I'm just going to share a personal story. I have personally known people that there are places you could go for extremely cheap dentures. And I'm going to leave it at that, but they are not from a grave. They are sort of uniform. You might have really, really big teeth until you can afford.
They won't necessarily fit good, but it's better than nothing.
Absolutely.
No, he started out by saying he didn't hope this would become political theater, but it's basically
that's essentially what it is. And he made a round table, people.
It's more of a square-ish
it is.
Table.
However,
it's not even a table. It's like five tables.
However, the fact that it's just playing on that obvious metaphor, I'm like, this is not the golden city of Camelot.
Nuggets.
So,
we should bring them a shrubbery to put in the middle.
The healthcare summit's really interesting. It's really interesting because the Republicans actually are, for once, putting their foot down. They're not giving in. Now, this does make them the, quote, party of no, end quote.
Oh, I love it. Like, whenever anyone would tell President Obama that he was wrong, he'd get really upset and be like, I don't think you have the right
facts.
Yeah,
he'd interrupt them. Okay, so
he calls everyone by their first name. I find that really disrespectful. It's not Senator so-and-so. It's always like Bob.
Agreed.
Susie. Like, I don't think that's respectful.
However, so as he's getting into the healthcare debate, like 2 hours in, and it's obviously more than 2 hours because my math
it's
is off.
6 hours long.
The moderator says.
It's Obama.
Yeah. No, the other moderator, the one that's like in charge of keeping Obama.
Oh, Sebelius?
Yes. He was like, I'd just like to point out that the Democrats have had 57 minutes of speech time and the Republicans have had 32
because
minutes.
Because my time doesn't count.
Yes, that's what he said. I didn't realize that was part of the bipartisanship. You know, we're looking for.
He's like, we need to stay on time.
Regardless, what's going to happen is that the Republicans aren't going to back down. It's an election year.
I think they needed to walk out.
According to Fox News, 71% of Americans are unhappy with what Congress is doing right now. This bill will not get passed because it is election year and people want those seats. Even though Nancy Pelosi said she was willing to sacrifice a few, the Republicans.
There's actually some student paper that said, like, in the best possible scenario, Democrats will lose 60 seats in November. I'm not sure where it came from. I saw it on Hot Air.
Like I said, it really depends on how smart the Republicans are. However, with the Democrats being a majority, the American people typically blame failures on the majority in Congress.
So
the majority
of Congress people they have Democrats. To blame.
So, I mean, this is a great opportunity for Republicans to step up to the plate and be like, no, we don't want this. The American people, you know, does not want this as a whole.
Obama put his little proposal online. This isn't even a bill. It's not like a tangible thing. It's literally a list of talking points. And nothing really introducing there. But there's a section on the website that says, like, Republican ideas or something.
They're trying to out-compliment Obama right now. They're like, oh,
Yeah.
You're such a great leader.
Yeah, it's like, oh, look at these three things I put in my proposal that the Republicans proposed. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm stoked that I could stay on my parents' health insurance till I was 26 because that's going to get me through grad school. But there's really nothing else in here. And like somebody said, you know, if you're so worried about spending, maybe we shouldn't spend $1 trillion to overhaul the healthcare system. And he's like, well, whether or not we can afford it is a serious topic that we do need to consider.
Why don't you just consider it now, okay? Forget the actual healthcare. Let's come up with, where are we going to get the money to do it?
We just make it?
No, that doesn't work.
Again, Weimar Republic, just saying. But yeah, it's just one thing.
They had a CPAC conference. They had, I'm going to butcher this. They're going to have Zimbabwean money. And it was like one bill was $100 trillion.
So it's like the peak of the inflation in Germany. It like one US dollar was like 200,000 Deutschmarks.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Inflation.
That's funny. That's like monopoly money, guys.
It is. It just turns into monopoly money because the money's not backed by anything. It's just backed by somebody's word.
And printing.
Why don't we just go back to the gold standard, dude? Or gold and silver. We can be a bi-metal country. I don't care. It's just not worth anything.
There's nothing
behind it.
Okay.
I don't know. This thing's basically sham. The idea is to come and talk about his plan, the House plan, and the Senate plan to make a new plan. Why didn't we just, you know, come in with blank paper if you're all going to be here to talk about it?
Yes, okay. Start over. I agree. I think that what you can do is everybody chips in a little portion. You know, you have funding under Category 1.
Oh, that's proposals it is. It was set up that way.
You know.
But there wasn't proposals.
Plans for women under, you know, Part 2. And just, like, bring it that way. But everybody's trying to bring their own bill and everybody wants exactly what's in their bill. Let's just, okay, I don't even agree.
Just start over. Apparently he's working on a backup plan that will only ensure 15 million Americans.
Plans. Yay.
He has like three backup plans.
Everybody's sob stories, I'm sorry, got on my nerves by the end of it. Everybody's
sob stories. They just get more and more ridiculous. It's like, I don't actually, they're like, the story about the dentures, you're not going to believe me, but this did happen. It's like, really? Because I still don't believe you that it happened.
Yeah.
I think it's a sham. Going into it, like he said since campaigning, you know, you needed to shut up and help clean up the mess. Like, he doesn't want to listen to other people's ideas. There's no tort reform in his idea, in his proposal. It's a sham. Nothing's going to come of it. I think the Republicans should have just walked out or just not shown because he wasn't going to listen to him.
That would have been an awful move because they would have taken it as a victory, made it completely.
But it's on national television. It's going to not look like a victory to them.
It doesn't matter.
We finally need an advocate
for the Republican Party, for the conservatives in America. We need an advocate there. While I think that they should probably get an award for having to sit through six hours of this.
They did get a pee break, though, like one, because the House had to vote on something. They got a break. They had buses for them.
To go to the bathroom?
No, to go to the Capitol so they could vote. And then they had to come back. But everybody
else
got a
bus. I had to walk.
Well,
to the
you weren't going to vote, were you? You're not a House member.
I could be a House member. I'd be a really good House member.
I find it irritating that, like, everyone, like, if you're in their House of Representatives, you're a congressman. It's like, why aren't you just a representative? Like, the other people are senators. Why do we have to call you congressman? Why do we need to make you feel better? It's still an awesome job. I don't think that it's degrading.
You know what? We did a political correctness story already, so don't even get me started on the subject.
I don't know. But yeah, it's a sham. Nothing's going to come of it.
It's ridiculous. And so, anyway, switching topics, kind of, but not really.
And it's pretty big shift in topics. It doesn't really help.
But it's still political, so.
Unless they have some really, they must have awesome healthcare in the Taliban. If, like, Osama bin Laden's still alive and he's on dialysis.
ABC. The 24th of February ran on Frontline. It was called Behind the Taliban.
I didn't even know Frontline was still on.
And they had a 9-month documentary which gave names, places, numbers, they gave dates, everything. So much useful, pertinent information about the Taliban. This man was like living in a tent
in the desert.
Right
in Finland, did they address
and
that?
He was, no, yes, they did.
Oh.
This man was living in the desert, and he came, and, he was in his little tent, and the Taliban kept coming to him and telling him their stories. Well, eventually, this one guy goes, let me talk to my boss, and the Taliban boss says, yes, bring him in, and he shall be recorded.
Office building.
Right, and so they bring him in for 9 months, and he gets to see how they terrorize citizens and the town that they are hiding out in. He gets to see how they border hop to prevent, you know, capture. He gets to, I mean, he gets to film all of this, and they're giving him specific locations. We're like, oh, we're here in Kandahar province today, and, you know, Billy McMadargalog is sitting
with... I think the first name would have been Billy. It's probably Ahmed or Muhammad.
Ahmed Billy Minog is...
That's always the bad guy's name on 24, by the way. It's always, like, Ahmed. Always.
Look at the real life situation. But anyway, the documentary was held for 1 month because one of the people in there was also in, like, an international film, and it would have jeopardized his life to be seen in it.
The Taliban people are, like, actors?
I think so it might have been, like, a citizen in the town that they were hiding out in. Regardless,
I know there was a booming film industry.
Regardless, they come, you know, they held onto this footage. ABC's Frontline did. They held onto this footage. And they didn't turn it in this 1 month sit period. They didn't make a copy and send it out to the government and all and say, hey, you might be interested in this.
And they probably said just how do you like this, dudes? And they're probably like,
So the big controversy right now is, why didn't you give this very valuable information? In the documentary, they plan an attack. They're like, oh, we're going to sit here across this road, and you're going to see
like
this
path. Kind of like a Geraldo, we're drawing the maps in the sand.
No, like, literally, they have this planned out. Now, you know, to the best of their ability, which is still very rudimentary, but they're planning this attack out. And because they sat on it and didn't turn it into anybody,
the attack went through
and killed people. That is ridiculous. That's irresponsible on the journalist's part. You have your footage. You left the country. You have it for 1 month. Make a copy and send it to the government, people.
Well, okay, we actually addressed this in one of my classes with a professor that I really can't stand, but we actually discussed this, you know, the feeling amongst journalists is that they owe nothing to the government. Their job is to be a watchdog, and by watchdog, they apparently mean just go out there and show how horrible the government is.
But the second a journalist gets captured,
the government did nothing to protect them. Well, see, it's the thing we talk about is that, you know, when they're embedded with soldiers, you know, they get to that point where the soldier just assumes that the journalist is there to tell the good things that soldier does. And they don't realize that the journalist is just there to tell the facts. The journalist also...
It's supposed to tell the facts.
The journalist gets to the point where, you know, they're like, I depend on the military for my protection, for my food, for my clothing, for my shelter. They get to the point where they're no longer objective because they feel they owe it to the military people. That's a lot of the problem with the embedding program, is that you just stay so long. If it was more like a rotating embed program, you would get that small picture, and you would also get then the big picture of what's going on in the war. But when it comes to something like this, the journalists don't feel they have an obligation
to the government because they
don't feel they have an obligation because
you don't have an obligation to innocent lives.
The attack,
I'm sorry.
Well, their thing is they have an obligation to the citizens of the United States. And that since this attack was in Afghanistan on Afghani people, they apparently didn't really seem to think it was important. They didn't feel they had an obligation.
No, the attack was on U.S. soldiers. Oh. The U.S. soldiers were killed by this. And that is ridiculous. That's irresponsible.
Well,
that's ridiculous.
Like the professor said, if you had the opportunity to interview Osama bin Laden, wouldn't you do it?
Absolutely, I would. I'd send a copy to every major...
I'd bring the Department of Defense with me, too. I'd bring the full weight of the United States military
Absolutely.
With me. There's this guy on CNN, Peter Bergen. No, that's not his name. But I can't think of his name, but he's actually really awesome. He's interviewed bin Laden like 6 times. And every time he talks about it, I'm thinking, why didn't you bring the government with you? Why didn't you? I mean, you knew this man was wanted. Why didn't
Look, you know what? Kudos to you for getting the information. That is a wonderful insight for the American people, but shame on you for costing American lives that are there to defend you, because I guarantee had they captured you, had they decided to keep you there at the end of the 9 months, you would have been crying to the U.S. to come save you. So shame on you, and I hope you can sleep with those lies on your hands.
I have serious disagreements with journalism in the field, is that I don't think it's right to go out there and take a picture of the face of a guy that's dying in the field and then publish it. I don't think that's right. Even if you get prior authorization, I don't think that's right. I think that's exploitive. I don't think it's right to go out there and only tell the horrible things that are happening. There are good things that the military is doing in Iraq and in Afghanistan, but you don't hear about them every day. They're opening schools, opening soccer fields, playing soccer with kids. But journalists don't want to cover that story because their idea is, why should I cover a story that my editor's not going to run? We need to get past, journalism needs to get past the mindset of money, profits, conflict. This is where I have serious, serious disagreements with my professors, with the profession. And I oftentimes have serious doubts about whether or not I actually want to pursue this field because I think it's so corrupt and it is so horrible.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, that's the one
thing. But that's also a reason why I still want to go in there, because I think I can change it.
Right.
But on happier notes, last week, Ashley ventured on a great big bus. Well, not even. It wasn't a bus, was it?
No,
it was like...
There was some shady...
on a moderately sized car, too.
Yeah, like, we got transferred there. We got IU covered transportation costs and drove us to D.C. It was literally, both times, it was overnight. We arrived in D.C. at 6 a.m. We arrived back in Bloomington at 8 a.m.
Yeah, because you said you're going to be here at, like, 10. And, like, for some reason, I was up at, like, 6 on a Sunday morning. And, like, I get your text that you're like, oh, in Bloomington, we'll call later. He never called, by the way.
Okay, you know what? I passed out for literally 24 hours. I woke up to eat dinner. I woke up with my face in the dinner. Like, I never got to eat it. I fell asleep. By the time preparation was done, I was so tired.
Well, I would assume so. And it probably wasn't a good sleep overnight. I mean, you're in a car.
I didn't sleep in the car.
You didn't take your drugs and pass out?
My load of people wanted to play 20 questions.
Oh, gosh, I hate 20 questions.
Okay, like, I've never played it, and I love that game, but 12 hours of it is no me gusta
too much.
At least
you can see, like, I Spy with My Little Eye for, like, 8 years, because you can only pick things inside the car, and after a while, you would have run out of things to pick. Well, that's always our rule, is you can only pick things inside the car.
Oh.
But, so I thought that we would ask Ashley a few questions about her awesome sauce experience of stealing pens and
there wasn't stealing them. I asked everybody. I even asked him for all these nice pins, and they just gave them to me.
I love pens and pins. Alrighty, so in case you don't know, CPAC's an annual convention.
It's pretty sure it's conservative political action conference.
I always love when they say CPAC conference, and I'm like, that's redundant, news people. But
I went around for like 2 days saying that. People just call it
the CPAC.
And I love how they say it with like a capital letter. Like the is capitalized. CPAC. You can hear it in their voice. Like, it's the CPAC.
But it's held every year, I believe, in D.C. Last year, what's his face?
Rush Limbaugh
was the keynote. It was like a 2-hour speech. Oh my gosh, it like lasted forever.
Glenn Beck was only supposed to speak for 45 minutes.
He only spoke for like 50. It was only 50 hours.
No, it was exactly an hour.
Anyways, so what were the high points for you being there? Like, both maybe like on a personal level or like on a political level?
Let's see. Thursday was by far the busiest day because Friday and Saturday I was sitting in line to meet people / hustling to the ballroom to wait for Glenn to speak. So
Friday you were camping out getting a spot.
No, I'm serious. People did it.
Wow. I mean, I would have done it.
There were 10,000 people at CPAC.
Wow.
And what happened? Well, I'll walk you through. So
it's like a crap ton of people.
Thursday morning, we get there. I literally got an hour of sleep, and then I had to get up and get ready. So I was not in the best of moods until I got, like, 5 cups of coffee in me, and then I was nice to people. But
we don't
I got
have
to
time for, like, a minute-by-minute run there. Yeah, no. At 18 minutes.
Okay, no, that's fine. I got to speak with Liz Cheney, who brought out Dick Cheney,
Lynn or Liz?
Liz.
Okay.
Liz Cheney.
Then you have more distinguishable names.
Yeah, no, Liz Cheney came out, and she was really cute. She brought Dick out, and Dick was funny. He was, got an amazing applause.
Because,
like, geez, if I got this, you know, I would run again. And, of course, everybody cheers louder. He's like, all right, knock it off. And it just made everybody
laugh.
Dude,
okay, he just had a heart attack. I don't think he's in the best physical fitness to run our office again.
But this was before the heart attack, and it wasn't even a heart attack, it was heart pain.
It was a mild heart attack.
Oh my gosh, there were so many awesome people. Mitt Romney was there, Scott Brown came, literally, that was packed. Thursday was absolutely packed.
A lot of people are getting angry because, Brown's gonna vote for the Senate jobs bill, aka stimulus part D.
It was very interesting, and they had a lot of amazing workshops. I went to a workshop about how to gain the Latino vote. I got
how to build a birdhouse.
How to start a grassroots movement from the bot, like from your
place.
Okay,
teaching somebody how to start a grassroots movement, that's a little astroturfy, in my opinion. Grassroots movements just happen.
No, but they're showing you how to organize and like ways
to
save
money. Were you a community organizer?
No, but I'm just saying, you know.
They seem to have gone bankrupt in the last few weeks.
Just saying.
You're being so mean. Well, I'm just saying Acorn went bankrupt. It's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, then Friday we had a mate. Like, I sat in line for Ann Coulter for a few hours.
I should have given you the book of hers that I have for you to keep, because I'm never going to read it again, and I should have given it to you to get signed, because you like her.
Anyway, Ann Coulter was there. She was amazing, and just really funny, really fast-paced.
Was she in a little black dress?
No, she was not in a little
She's always in a little black dress.
No, she was in a very nice pantsuit.
Whoa.
And then, okay, so we had that. Then Friday I went to go see the Capitol. I got to go into the Republican cloakroom. It was amazing. Did you know the senators have their own private subway? Which I understand why, because they'd get mobbed. But, I mean, this thing was nice. There was a man that asked me if I'd like a spritzer. And I was like, most certainly I would. And I felt really grubby because it had been snowing so much and everything was really dirty. You had to wear sneakers in between buildings. Mm-hmm. And then you could switch into heels. So, and then Sunday, I literally sat in line for Newt Gingrich. I was first in line for Newt and Ann. As soon as Newt signed my books, I hustled to the ballroom. I still had to wait outside to get seats. I got my seat, and I waited for 4 hours for Glenn to speak.
Oh, there were three, like, ballrooms full.
I did not go to the bathroom. Like, I had to go so bad after Glenn. But the amazing thing was that, with the ballroom thing, the line was through several ballrooms on several floors and eventually went out of the hotel to see Glenn.
Well, I mean, he's so popular.
I got in.
Speaking
so I was like,
of which speaker resonated the most with you?
Which speaker? I'm going to go with Alan West. He's running for Florida. Like, he's running as a congressman in Florida, District 22, I think. And he was just really down to earth, and I got to speak with him later, and he's just the nicest person. He took time for everybody. Even when he had appointments to keep, he was like, look, come with me, just wait in line. As soon as I'm done with the speech, I will talk to you right then. And it's just really awesome.
So, like, what was the atmosphere of the people there like? Like, were they thinking, you know, the Republican Party's abandoned me? Were they thinking, yeah, it's time for another revolution, like in 96? Like, what
actually,
the
there were more libertarians than Republicans, and as you know, I identify myself as a conservative, not a Republican, mm-hmm. because I think they need to reevaluate themselves. And Glenn Beck really issued a challenge to the Republican Party.
A lot of people are getting really angry with him too, for saying that you can't tell the parties apart. I mean, I don't think he means ideologically you can't. I think he means it by their actions.
Absolutely, he does. And you know what? He issued a great challenge, and if the Republican Party is smart, they will heed his words, and they will rise up to the challenge and prove what they used to be. But right now, I don't see that. And I think that what really amazed me at the conference was the range and the scope of the problems facing the conservative thought. I mean, I had no idea. And
you mentioned there were so many young people there.
Absolutely,
there were. I think the stats is like 45% of the people there were from 18 to 24.
Yeah, I have the
So much for the old white men thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of young people. Not so many women. There was a lot of men. But, yeah, so many young people. It was really great to see. And, I mean, everything was really fun. They had a Wrestle for Your Rights sumo competition that you could sign up for. And, yeah.
So, there was a lot of controversy. I read about it on a blog, and then I texted you after it happened. There was this speaker, and I guess he was just bashing homosexuals, and people were, like, getting really ticked off.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Of the co-sponsors of CPAC this year is a group called GOP Proud.
Yes.
And it's basically a group that's pro-gay rights and pro-conservatism.
Okay, look.
So what did you, like, was there a sense that maybe that you got that these people shouldn't have been co-sponsoring, because a lot of the media is saying, oh, this was a horrible
Absolutely
thing.
Not. One of the workshops I went to was reaching the vote of the growing population. You know, 100 years ago, Catholics were not considered the desirables, which is why JFK was a Democrat, was because we were told 100 years ago, Catholics, you're just going to be run by the Pope. Mm. You know, then you have the Latino vote. A lot of Latinos share a conservative ideal, but they are not considered the desirables
by
the
party. A lot of African Americans are
absolutely
conservative.
Absolutely, the African
American their values, there will be straight up conservative values, but if you ask them what their political ideology is, they'll always tell you Democrat.
Absolutely. And so, you know, That is no different than the gays. If the gays don't feel like they're...
They all want those conservative ideas. They all want to be able to have families, jobs. They want to contribute to society.
And if...
Those are conservative ideas.
Absolutely. And so what the problem was I think absolutely GOP should be there. Or GeoProud, excuse me. And I think that it was very important for them to realize that they have the potential to be the next Latino vote, to be the next Catholic vote, to be the next African-American vote. They... You know, as they come out of the closet, and as there are more, you know, rules and whatever set forth for them, you know, they're going to be the swinging vote. They're going to determine it one way or another. Mm-hmm. So.
It's always going to get back to the religious right. I mean, I don't think that they're ever really going to accept the gays, because apparently you go to hell if you're gay.
But this is my thing, is that I am not the good Lord, and the good Lord is the one that it gives the ultimate decision.
He creates everybody, so why would he create somebody knowing they were going to go to hell?
Look, I'm Catholic, so, you know, my religion says homosexuality is wrong. My personal opinion is that as long as you aren't hurting anybody and your love is between two consenting adults, it is up to the
good, I don't want
to
see
it is up to the Lord above whether or not that is wrong. It is not up to me.
And so lastly, do you feel that not necessarily because of CPAC, or when you were at CPAC, did you feel that there is a shift in, let me rephrase that, did you feel that there's going to be a shift in the Republican Party going forward because of this conservative movement coming back? Do you feel after CPAC that they're starting to get their act together and they realize they're not connecting with the values that they were founded on?
They're getting together in the sense that they want to change. However, the issues that are more important to some people are not as important to others. And, you know, even though I was in awe of the range and scope of the issues, at the same time, I was like, you are never going to be able to come to an agreement, and it's always going to be vote for my thing or I won't vote for yours. And so you need to pick, I guess, the main issues facing the party, okay? Whether it's jobs, healthcare, education, whatever it is, come up with it. And just stick to that. We can focus on the nitty-gritty later. Nitty-gritty is not important. You need to look at the forest, not at the trees.
Trees are pretty, though.
Absolutely, they are. But the division is going to come. Because everybody was saying, oh, the Tea Party movement is going to be its own party. No, absolutely, it will not. Because they realize it's going to be a division of the party.
Yeah, that's what happened with Teddy Roosevelt back in the day. He started Bull Moose Party
or something.
It happened
with Bush when he ran for second term again when Clinton came in. You know, we had another conservative step up as an independent. It split the vote. So absolutely, we will not have a division of the vote if people are smart. And I feel that the CPAC...
CPAC.
Absolutely, it did. I feel that people recognize the need for change. And I feel that they have the opportunity now to make it. The opportunity, the resources to make that change. The determining element will be... the other thing, too, and you can cut the first part out. The other thing, too, is that this was a huge step for the libertarians to come. There were so many libertarians there that were stepping up. And I think what might happen is that they replace the Republican Party as they slowly morph into it. Just like the liberals are now called progressives, libertarians were sneaking in there. So, I mean...
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, not so much. I mean, some ideas are great and everything in moderation. So... They have the opportunity to change. They have the tools to change. Mm-hmm. Whether or not we see it depends on a level head and clear goal, clear mindset.
Alrighty, well, that's all the time we have for this week. This is a pre-recorded show because I'm lame and I wanted to go home and eat potatoes
and get
my laundry
done.
So I will we're going to post this on our podcast feed where you can find other episodes we did before WIUX, and you can listen to this whole half hour. Segment unedited, full of awesomeness. So if you want to find this, you can probably find a link on our very brand new blog, which I started and I have to teach Ashley how to use. It's iucommonsense.blogspot.com.
You can also write to us at iucommonsense@gmail.com
or find us on the Twitter at iucommonsense.
Or Facebook group, IU Common Sense with Ashley and Ashley.
Or actually, you can find the podcast in the iTunes store. I'm pretty sure if you just, like, type in, like, search for IU Common Sense, the podcast shows up magically in iTunes. It's very exciting.
Awesome.
So, alrighty, so until next week.
Sunday for me.
Oh, because Ashley's awesome, and she just does whatever she wants nowadays. She's a big fancy star. So until next time, I am Ashley F.
I'm Ashley F.
And join us next week for another dose of Common Sense.